few short ideas relating to Parashas Bichu Koisai. Okay, first of all, we begin Parashas Bichu Koisai. At the very end of the Parasha is the mitzvah of Maaser Behema. Just as a way of Hakdama, a remez to the significance of this week's Parasha, it's the last mitzvah in the parasha. The mitzvah, I shouldn't say that we have tmur, lo yivaker, tmur is repeated twice, but the maftir, the end of the parasha, winds down with the mitzvah of maaser behema, where a person is supposed to pass his animal through a narrow opening in the pen, and count the animals, and when you come to animal number 10, you strike it with some red paint to designate animal number 10 as Maaser for Hashem. Ho Asiri Yihiya Kodesh. Chazal tell us all 10s are holy. It's not just that this 10 is holy, the number 10 is holy. We know they make a minion. The person that makes the minion, he brings the Shechina. Asar Yoshim, Ba'iskim Torah, the Shechina. There's a very intense degree of Kutlusha when there are 10 people. V'nikdashli B'soch B'nei Yisrael. Ho Asiri, and this is based upon the principle, it's more homiletic. Ho Asiri Yihiya Kodesh. I once heard this used in reference to Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, Tisha B'Av began on the 9th day of Av, but the Beis HaMikdash burned primarily on the 10th day. The Churban, we commemorate the Churban on the 9th day. The commemoration.
The Beis HaMikdash was the
10th
anyhow.
Okay, we began on the 10th. Okay, wait.
You have Tisha B'Av, because the second one is the closer one.
The closer one. But we commemorate the Churban on the 9th. We commemorate it. But the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 10th. So the Darshanim explain Ho Asiri Yihiya Kodesh. That was by design, because the 10th is holy. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was not an act of anger, was not an act of Churban. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sparing us. Mizmor La'osav Bo'o Goyim B'Nachalosech, Mizmor La'osav Kina La'osav, famous Chazal, wanted to say Mizmor, to say Kina, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by destroying the Beis HaMikdash, allowed us to survive. It was the exchange for our survival. It was a holy act to allow us to survive. Ho'asiri Yihi HaKadosh. We should not think of Tisha B'Av as just the Churban, as just a punishment. There is meaning behind the punishment. And for that matter, that's what the parasha of the Teuchah is all about. This week's parasha, we learn and we read the Teuchah. The Teuchah is not just anger. Teuchah is an act of Kedusha. And for that reason also, Parashas Bichu Kosai is the 10th parasha in Chumash Vayikra. And this week, when we read Parashas Bichu Kosai, it is Ho'asiri. So when you wind down after and you read Asiri Yekodesh, there are many types of tens. And in the Teuchah lie some of the greatest brachos. In fact, it used to be the custom years ago, I don't think they do this anymore, but it used to be the custom that Hasidim would come to visit their Rebbe on Parshas Bichu Kosai, Bahar Bichu Kosai, more than they would come to visit the Rebbe on Yom Tif, because on Parshas Bichu Kosai used to be the custom that the Rebbe, the greatest person in the community, would read the Teuchah. And by reading the Teuchah, he had the koyach to be mahapech klolo lebracha. In the Teuchah is hidden some of the greatest brachos. Ho'asiri, the 10th parish of Chumash Vayikra, Yihiye Kodesh. Okay, let's go to another idea. We have coming up. No, not the other nine. Ho'asiri, number 10 is Kodesh.
He said he overcome the Kodesh.
No, the other 10 don't become Kodesh. No, definitely not. You pass all the animals through the pen, and when you get to number 10, you mark it with the red paint, and animal number 10 is Maaser Behema. And we'll go to the Na'ayin Achud. Okay, let's go. This week is Sunday is Lag Ba'Omer. Mitzoy Shabbos is Lag Ba'Omer. I just want to show you there's a remez, a very powerful remez in this week's parasha to Lag Ba'Omer in the beginning of the parasha and at the end of the parasha. Just a remez. No heavy duty, deep meaning. The beginning of the parasha begins with Im Bichu Gosai Teilechu V'yetz Mitzosai Teshuvu V'asis Mosam. What does it mean Im Bichu Gosai Teilechu? Everyone knows the Rashi. What's the Bichu Gosai Yochol? Are we the Rashi Yochol Zekim HaMitzos? Kishoimus in the Pasuk V'yetz Mitzosai Teshmiru. When the Pasuk continues and tells us to do the mitzvos, those are the mitzvos. Sahare Kiyam Mitzvos. Emor Homani Mikayim Im Bichu Gosai Teilechu Shetihiyu Amelim Batorah. Amelim Batorah. What's the bracha? If you are a male matara, v'nosati gishmecham b'itam, v'nosnaret sivulah, the earth will produce produce. The eitz hasodeh yitain piryo. Rashi, what kind of eitz hasodeh? Hein ilone sirak. The bracha of a male, being a male matara, results in a miracle. Not only will the fruit trees produce fruit, that's darka shalolam, but even the ilone sirak will produce a fruit. Ilon Yisrak means trees that don't have fruit. Trees that don't normally produce fruit will produce peros. What is the significance of Lag BaOmer? So one of the main ideas of Lag BaOmer, we commemorate Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, it's the Yom Hilul of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. What is the essence of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? So let's go to what the Gemara tells us. We learned, discussed yesterday. We have a contradiction. One pasuk tells us, "V'higisa lo yomu shatora hazem ipicha, v'higisa bo yomu v'layla." A person may not abandon the Torah. He has to immerse himself in Torah yomu v'layla. Problem is, the Gemara poses a contradiction. It says in the pasuk, "V'yachal." It says in the pasuk, I don't remember the psukim. The person has to go out into the field, and he has to plow, and he has to plant, and he has to gather in his produce. A person has to be noig bohem minog derech eretz. Okay, so we have a contradiction. We have two psukim. One pasuk seems to indicate that a person has to live a life minoig bohem minog derech eretz, and the other pasuk tells us that a person lo yomu shatora zemipicha noig bohem minog derech eretz. So which of these two psukim is the ikar? So the Rabbi Yehuda says in the Gemara, the ikar pasuk is noyeg bohem minog derech eretz. A person should live a life of derech eretz, and v'gis b'yom v'layla can be fulfilled with kriya shma. That is how Rabbi Yehuda explains the contradiction in the psukim. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai disagrees. He says it's not so. The Iker Pasuk is V'higisa bo yomu v'layla. A person should spend all of his time learning Torah. And the Pasuk that tells us that a person has to do Melacha, that's Bezman She'ein Yisrael Oysim Ritzayin Shal Makam. When Yisrael is not doing Ritzayin Shal Makam, and they're going to have no choice, they're going to have to go out into the world and make a Parnasa. They're going to have to go and plow their fields and work and labor and work 24/7 to make a Parnasa. But Bezman She'ein Yisrael Oysim Ritzayin Shal Makam, then Melachton Nases Al Yidei Acherim. So we have over here two different approaches to life. We have the approach of Rabbi Yehuda. The approach of Rabbi Yehuda is a person has to live a life of derech eretz. Noeg bohem minig derech eretz. What's going to be with learning Torah? No, don't worry about it. Someone will learn Torah, or you learn the minimal amount, say Kriya Shema, in the morning and at night. That is a token fulfillment of Yigisa v'yom v'layla. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says just the opposite. You have to spend all of your time learning Torah, and you cannot spend one moment making parnasa. Parnasa, b'shman, she'yishol eisim v'tzen shalmakam, will come from other people. The Gemara goes on to relate that people tried. Case studies were done. Which of the two techniques will work? Many people tried to follow Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. They tried to spend their whole lives in Kollel and assumed that their parnasa would come from someone else. V'loy hitzlichu. They were not successful. They were not successful. Didn't work. Many tried. Others tried, like Rabbi Yehuda, and they went out and they made parnasa, and they discovered, they found time also to learn, and they became talmidei chachamim, and they were successful. So the Gemara seems to conclude that, by and large, we have to follow the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. We have to live a life where noyeg bohem minog derech eretz. This is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbanan. This is Dargoy Shel Olam. There are Yechidim. There may be individuals who are Noig Rabbi Shmuel and survive. There's an approach in Chinuch that a person, before he goes out into the world and is Noig Bam Minig Derech Eretz, he should at least attempt in his lifetime to have a tkufa, a short period of time, whether it's a year or whether it's a few months, to experience what it means, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, to live a life of to be completely immersed in Torah. To have that a short experience in life. But Derech Lal, the Gemara says very clearly that the correct approach to life is like Rabbi Yehuda, to be Noig Bohem Minig Derech Eretz. this Gemara, I don't remember. I said it yesterday. I quoted the Gemara yesterday. I read the Gemara yesterday inside. I don't remember.
Didn't Rabbi Aaron change his mind when he came out of the cave?
I don't think he saw people who were not even nechers. He didn't destroy them. He didn't give them a look and turn them into a pile of bones. He didn't vaporize them, right? Exactly. But Yivamis. Kuf Chabez? Yivamis Kuf Chabez. But that was the Shimsa Goinim. That was a different Gemara. I think it was a different Gemara. All right, wherever the Gemara is. Now the point though is, Derech Klal. We live in a world where we're noig b'hem d'minig derech eretz. But we also have an appreciation. We have an appreciation of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay, we live in the world that we live in. Everyone, every person to some degree is noig b'hem d'minig derech eretz. That's the way it is. The Gemara says, but that doesn't mean that we don't appreciate and for one day in the year step back and appreciate the ideal, the higher madrega of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, his approach of life, of sitting in a cave and learning Torah Yom V'Layla and benefiting from miracles where HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides him with charuvim, caribs, and a stream of water provides him with parnasa. That is alluded to here in the beginning of the parasha. The beginning of the parasha begins with Im bichugosai teilechu. It's erev lag baomer. Im bichugosai teilechu. Rashi amelin b'torah. Amelin b'torah means nothing but Torah. And this is the shita of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And what is the reward? The pasuk concludes the eitz hasadeh yitain piryo. What kind of trees are going to produce fruit? Not ordinary trees, which anyway would produce fruit, of minig derech eretz, elonei sarak. Trees which normally do not produce fruit will blossom and will produce fruit. This is the life of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's interesting that many years, Lag BaOmer always falls out either within Parshas Emor, Bahar, or Bichukosai, and this year especially where Lag BaOmer is Erev, falls out right after we read Parshas Bichukosai, where in the beginning of Parshas Bichukosai, we have here a call out, a respect, a recognition that there is something greater than we are shaykh to. I guess this would be true in the Moshe Mashiach and Achas Hayamim. There is something that we should be sensitive to appreciate this concept of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, of Haneg Bohem, of the Gisa Bayom of Alayla, and Bizman Shay Yisrael Eisim Ritzin Shal Mokim, Melachta Nases Al Yidei Acherim. Now, the end of the Haftorah, the last pasuk of the Haftorah, is a very powerful pasuk of Refuah. Everyone needs good health, and we should all be zochet to good health. And the last word of this week's Haftorah, Rifa'enu, we borrow this word for the Nusach HaTfilah, Rifa'eni Hashem Ve'ei Rafei, Hoshi'enu V'iva Sheki Sihilo Siyata. Okay, this is mamish to what we use, this expression in the Nusach HaTfilah, in the Bracha Rifa'enu, Hashem, you are our source of praise, Refuah. There is a popular Nutrikin on Lag BaOmer. Some have the custom to go to Meiron, or in America at least to go online and look at a live webcam, see what's going on in Meiron. Meiron is Roshei Tevos, Melech, Rofe, Neman, V'Rachaman. Many people who Rachman Lutzlan need of a Yeshua, I'm not into segulis, but there's something to it. There's something to going to the kever of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and being nader that if Rashbi will assist me in helping me be mispalel to Hashem and my tefillos will reach the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I will be make a neder to do a certain thing, and this should be a zuchus. So the people say that Meiron itself is Rosh Etevos, Rofe, not in order, but Rofe, Nemon, Melech, Rofe, Nemon, Virachamon, Meiron. So we have here the beginning of the Parsha, Im Bichugosai Teilechu, Amelim Mitorah. Amelim Mitorah represents the approach to life of Rashbi, that v'gisa b'yom v'layla, and the merit is melachta nases al yedei acherim v'nos v'etz hasadeh yitein piryo l'mal miderech hateva, just like Rashbi was zochetu to have charuvim provided, he was given food l'mal miderech hateva, and the end of the laning concludes with the bracha of refuah, and refuah is alluded to in the kever of Rashbi melech rofe nemon v'rachman. I just thought it was a cute little remnant. Okay, let's go to something more serious. Okay, something more serious. Okay, I want to combine.
Our rabbi yesterday mentioned that the
Chassam Sofer objects strongly to the minig of going to Meiron.
Right.
Chassam Sofer was famous for his objection. He held that it's a zilzal in the Kiddush of Yerushalayim. To give too much honor to Tzfas, to Tveria, is a zilzal in the Kiddush of Yerushalayim. And he didn't hold from this. He didn't hold from this whole idea. Yeah.
At least the earthquake in
came due to too much kalas roish in what takes place in Meiron. The Bali Musar say the ultimate way a person can connect to the neshama of a person is to learn what he says. I'll give you an example. There's a very Rapam writes about this. Rapam, I even heard Rapam say this many years ago, that if a sefer falls on the floor, what do you do? What are you supposed to do? There are two customs. A chumash falls on the floor, or a sefer. So the common custom is, you pick it up and you kiss it. You kiss it and you put it. There's another custom. Don't kiss it. You'll get germs. Open it up for a few moments and read what it says. From the two customs, which one is a much greater honor? There's no question, there's a much greater honor to open up the sefer and to read what it says. Don't show signs of affection. Don't kiss it. It doesn't need your germs and you don't need its germs. It's not necessary. You want to connect, you want to show that you respect this sefer, learn what the sefer says. If a tzaddik has the yartzeit for a tzaddik, and you want to connect to that tzaddik, you want that tzaddik to be mispalul and shemaim on your behalf, or you want to invoke his zuchus for yourself, or you want to connect with him, there are two ways you can do this. You can go to his kever, and you can put a stone on the kever, and you can give money in honor of the tzaddik, or you can take the tzaddik's writings. You can take what the tzaddik's taught in this world and study and learn from his life. There are numerous mamori chazal that Rashbi has said. In fact, there are many svarim, there are machzorim for Lag BaOmer that relate all of the teachings they collect from Shas and Agado and Medrash, all of Rashbi's teachings and with commentaries. It would be a much greater inyan on Lag BaOmer to stay home and open up this type of sefer and read what Rashbi said, learn about his life, and become a better person. That is like learning from the sefer instead of kissing the sefer. And Echanami, that's the Chassam Sofer. He strongly objected. He felt it was Bittul Torah. And I think in Bells, I think that's what I read, that in Bells, they don't go to the kever. They object. It's Bittul Torah. Even Lob Chassidim, they generally go for these type of things. But I think at least the previous Bel Rebbe, they don't go to the Meiron. Yeah.
He felt that way about a Kol Shvat Sefer.
Also, not to go
start. They used to send the Gabbai out to the Akomas Maseva, but it was the biggest cost to sit in Beis Medrash and learn.
To learn, right. Especially to learn.
It's a big old Torah.
So all
the
trips
that
way.
Sounds like a lot.
Crone has a whole thing.
If you're anyway not going to be learning,
they sent the guy out there to make a mole, and that's it. Everybody else stayed in the basement just to learn.
Not everyone is holding by learning. To hold by learning 24/7, it's a very lot. People need some outlet. So people who go, what's the alternative? The alternative of not going to Meiron is I'm going to sit home and go online and read all the blogs. It would be much better to Ellis to go to a kever than to sit home and do nothing and to go online. But if a person is a Baal Madrega and he's sitting in the basement, so of course it's a much bigger discuss. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, there are two different letters in the Lubavitcher Rebbe about going to Meiron. In one of his earlier letters, he writes, it's a waste of time, don't go. They asked him, Eretz Yisrael, should we send the yeshivas? They told him, no, don't send. And later in his life, when he was asked again, he said, no, it's a good thing, you should all go.
So the Lubavitch Rebbe appears to have changed his position. It's not a raya. It's not a raya. It all depends who asked the question. It all depends on his mood. It all depended on the situation. But there are two letters when he was asked this question, and they contradict one another. Okay, let's go.
Later time, he has a brother buried in Tzfas.
So,
and the
And so, okay, it was personal negius.
Go out to visit my brother.
Personal negius.
Once he said that, he couldn't say not go to. No.
That's a chiddush to say that. Okay, let's go. Okay, let's go to something a little more. Niskanu Adaris. Anyway, not going to learn. So right. Anyway, in earlier years they were serious learners, so therefore it's Biddle Torah. In later years, anyway, in the streets making trouble. So get off the streets. Instead of making trouble, you might as well go on a trip. Okay, let's go to something more serious. I just want to combine two short verloch. I think together they have more of a knockout punch. The pasuk says, the pasuk gives us the brachas of observing Hashem's mitzvos migamel b'torah v'nosati shalom ba'aretz. Hashem says, I will bring peace to the earth. There will be peace in Eretz Yisrael. Ushraftem ve'in macharid. You'll lie down. You'll be afraid. V'shvati chayer amin aretz v'cherev. A sword lo savor bi'aretzichem. And then it goes on to say, Uri daftem etz oyveichem. You will pursue your enemies. The question is, why are there enemies? Why are we chasing our enemies if there's peace? Right, it's a very simple question. It says here, there's peace, there's shalom aretz. There's peace in the earth. There's shalom. And then it says, the chever lo savar bi'artzichem. And then it goes on to say, uri daftem es oyveichem, v'nafu lufnechem lechoref, and you'll chase, 5 will chase 100, 100 will chase 10,000. But what's going on? If there's peace, there's no war. So the answer is, the pasuk doesn't mean there is 100% peace. The bracha is, the wars will not be fought al admas kodesh. Tremendous bracha, that we all know that in various wars, when war is fought at home, when it's fought on your homeland, it's a different type of war. When an enemy has to be eliminated, it's a very great bracha that the enemy will be eliminated on foreign soil, al admas nechar. So that's why it says, there's shalom ba'aretz, there's peace in Eretz Yisrael, and if it will be necessary to eliminate our enemy, you will pursue the enemy in their territory, not in Eretz Yisrael. In your land. So now when you'll be pursuing the enemy, it doesn't mean in Eretz Yisrael, you'll be pursuing the enemy in their territory. Now that's one var. That's a short var, very nice var. Another var. Pasuk includes, V'naflu oyveichem lifneichem, your enemies will fall before you, in front of you, lechorev, by sword. Rashi says they'll fall before you, sheyihu noflim lifnechem sheloi kederech aretz, in an unusual way. Now this is based upon a medrash when David killed Goliath fell forward, and the medrash notes that this was l'mal l'miderech hateva. According to the rules of physics, Goliath should have fell backwards. Now Goliath was a giant, even if he wasn't a giant. So the question is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu go through the effort of doing this miracle that he fell forwards and not backwards? In order not to be matriach David. David is a tzaddik. Instead of David, David had to go and cut off his head, had to cut off his head to bring his head back home and show that he killed Goliath. So if Goliath would have fallen backwards, David would have to take a couple of extra steps to reach his head, to cut it off, to bring it home. The extra steps forward and the extra steps backwards. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved David these few extra steps. And if you explain that Goliath was a giant, so it could be he was like a 100-story building, so then maybe it's a very big difference. It could be there was an Afghanina. But now when you say that he fell forwards, HaKadosh Baruch Who spared David did not have to walk very far. Now look at this. When you combine and this pasuk, the Gemara, Chazal tells that this concept is going to be true in all wars. In all wars, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save you the effort of traveling a greater distance. Now we take these two ideas together, they have more of a knockout punch. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, you can have peace in your land. I'm giving you a bracha that anytime there is an enemy, Klal Yisrael has an enemy, and it's necessary for you to eliminate the enemy. I'm giving you a bracha. You will not have to eliminate the enemy in your territory. They will not come to you. Your land will be safe and secure. Your boundaries, your borders, enemy will not penetrate. But there will be a need, and it could be for good reasons. So we have to go out into the world, conquer the world. We have to conquer Amalek. So it's Baruch Hashem, it's not in our territory. But that may mean we might have to travel thousands of miles. We'll have to travel to Uganda. We'll have to travel to who knows where. To who knows where we're going to have to go travel across oceans. So that's the second part of the bracha. When it will be necessary to eliminate the enemy, in addition to the bracha that not the war not being fought in your land, you won't have to travel very far either. You'll be able to kill them at the boundary, right outside, because the enemy will fall forwards, shaloi kederech haaretz, like Goliath who fell forwards, not backwards. It's the ultimate bracha. The ultimate bracha is the war will not be fought in your land. It'll be fought in someone else's land. But I also won't be matriach you to travel across oceans to seek them out. I'll make it easy for you. I'll make it easy. Just cross the boundary and right then and there. They'll be there waiting for you and you can wipe them out, you can finish them off and you can teach them a lesson. Okay, let's go to another idea. V'achaltem yoshon noshon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a bracha that you'll eat food that is old. Yoshon noshon v'yoshon mipnei chadosh totziu. Let me read the words of Rashi. Beautiful Rashi. HaPeros yu mishtamrim v'toivim lehisyashen. The fruit that you will eat will be fruit that will be preserved and they will be of high quality. She yoshon hanoshon shel sholoshonim yofu lechol mishel ishtakad. The fruit that you eat that's 3 years old will be just of good quality, if not better quality, than the fruit that has come in this past year. Okay, then he goes further. V'yoshon mipnei chadosh totziu. Now here are the key words. Sheyiyu hagronos moleos chodosh. The storehouses will be filled with chodosh, with the crop from last year. The ha'itzros moleos yoshan. I'm sorry, the gronos, I mean the silos. The gronos means what's in the field. The gronos means the silos in the field. They will have filled with new grain, the grain that has just come in. The otsros. The otsros means the treasure house. The play, the storehouses. Meleos yoshan. Now you got a problem. Now we're getting a new shipment. A new shipment is coming in from the silo, from the gronos. And guess what? We don't have anywhere to store the new shipment. Because the otsar is full to capacity. So now before I read Rashi, what would you do? What would you do if you had this situation? Truckloads of new goods are coming in and our storage room is full to capacity. So you would get on the phone and you would find a new storage facility for the incoming shipment. And the goods, the produce, or whatever I have in my current otsar will remain put. Now, if you were a manager and you would start saying, "Oh, we are getting a new shipment, so I'm going to make a phone call. I'm going to find a new facility, a new storage house, and I'm going to send trucks to deliver the goods in my regular otsar to the new otsar to make space for the new shipment, and the new shipment will come into my main otsar." That's ridiculous. That's a waste of time and of effort. Why would you what?
Reduce your inventory. Right. Sell more to customers.
You don't want to reduce the inventory. You want the inventory. You're going to keep the inventory for future use. You're going to find. You'll eventually find another buyer. Who in their right mind would take the inventory in otsar number one and transport it to otsar number two so that when the trucks come in we can store the new inventory in otsar number one? Just directly send the new goods that are coming in to otsar number two. Isn't that logical? That this is what will be done. So yeah, what does Rashi say? What does the Pasuk say? The Yashan, Mipnei Chodosh Totziu. The Torah is telling you, no. You're a farmer. You have inventory in Otzer number one. You get a call, new stuff is coming in. You get a new Otzer, Otzer number two. You ship from Otzer number one to Otzer number two, so we can put in the new produce that's coming in from the field into Otzer number one. Why in the world would you want to do that? It's a waste of time and effort. So this is a question I saw in the Sefer Alehi Goyon. Alehi Goyon by the name of the Mechaber is, I skipped my mind. Alehi asked this question. So it's not his own idea. He says from the Bali Musar. So the Bali Musar say, from this you learn a very powerful insight. You know why you do this? Because this Otzer number one has a proven track record. The Baracha, why is it that Rashi, the first Rashi says, you'll have Yoshan Noshan. You'll have in your storehouse inventory, crops, produce that's of the highest quality. But it's 3 years old. After a couple of months, it gets wormy. It's the quality. It's stale. No, Hashem is giving you a bracha va'achaltem yoshan noshan that your crops will be delicious. They'll be fresh even 3 years. To what do you attribute your success? All your competitors, their stock is gone after 3 months. It must be the otzer. There must be something very special about the otzer. The otzer, this otzer has a mazel, or this otzer has a great climate control, has a great air conditioning system, ventilation system. There is some bracha that is found in this otzer that has allowed the produce to be preserved for a prolonged period of time. Therefore, when I now get in a new crop and I want my new crop also to receive, to benefit from the bracha, that one day it should be yoshan noshan, I have to follow the Messiah. I have to follow what works. I have to do what I know works. It has to go through the system. It has to go through this otzer.
But it's going to balance out, because if you're taking the old stuff and putting in a new one,
the assumption is once the old this stuff has been in the otzer for a couple of years,
it's
been blessed, and it's not going, no matter what you do to it, it's not going to get ruined. Once the delicate period of time is when you first put. So the Bali Musa say this pasuk in the brachos. In the brachas of this parasha is a Musar Haskel for raising children, for raising talmidim, for your dealings and everything you do in life. There are certain things that work. Things that work. People, they look around and they see they have bracha. They see, well, look at this. I'm successful. Unusual bracha. I'm zocha to achaltem yoshan noshan. Hashem gave me bracha. And now I get a phone call, there's a new shipment coming in. I got a new crop of talmidim, a new grandchild, a new child, a new business opportunity. What should I do? Should I go through the same mahalach? Should I use the same old system and bring in the new shipment, the new crop through the old otzer? Or you know what? Listen, keep the stuff in the old otzer where it is, and we'll try something new. We'll try a new technique, a new system. Maybe it will be just as good, if not better. The pasuk over here is telling you, if you want bracha, don't rock the boat. If something works, if the system works, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That is all part of the bracha. This is from the Balim Mosali. V'achaltem yoshan v'yoshan. The pasuk is not only giving you brachas, the pasuk is also giving you instructions. A lot of the Balim Mosali, when they read this psukim over here, they read it sometimes the bracha, but they also read it as instructions. I'll give you another example. We just learned this in Eof. Pasuk Hey, the Siglechem Dayeshes was Siglechem Zara, Va'achaltem Lachmachem Lasova. So simply it's a bracha. You'll eat and you'll be satisfied. You'll eat a small amount, you'll be satisfied. The Baal Yom will say, this is not just a bracha, these are instructions. Have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you are a person who is Bichukosai Teilechu, Vietz Mitzvosai Tishmeru, that means you have the liberty of having faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you can eat lasova. I don't have in my, all I have is enough food to survive for this for today. What's going to be tomorrow? I don't have enough food. So if you're not a Baal B'tochon, then tomorrow, then you know you're in a lot of trouble. You better not eat what you have today and put it away for tomorrow. And today, don't fill up your stomach. Don't eat to satisfaction. Only eat
minimal.
Pasuk says, "In bichokos sai teilechu v'yas mitzvah sai tishmeru." Hashem is giving you instructions. Va'achaltem lachmachem lasova. Don't worry. Exactly the opposite of Eov. There we're discussing the Rasha. Similar from last week. V'achaltem, Hashem says, "Don't worry. Don't worry. Things don't look so good in the future, but you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're bichokos sai teilechu v'yas mitzvah sai tishmeru. I give you instructions. Just eat a good meal. Don't worry what's going to be tomorrow. I'll take care of you. If you're not following my mitzvahs, then you have what to worry about. These are instructions." Part of the instructions, according to this approach, the Balei Musar, v'chodosh v'yoshon mibnei chodosh totziu. This is something that's not logical. This violates every rule in business management. You will not get your MBA if you follow the Torah's advice. V'chodosh mibnei yoshon totziu. Tell this to your boss. Explain to your boss why you wasted $100,000 in shipping to ship out all of the goods in this otzer to a new otzer to make room for the new shipment instead of having the new shipment go directly to the new otzer. Doesn't make any sense. You'll lose your job. You won't get a degree. You'll be fired. But the Torah says when it comes to matters of spirituality, when it comes to ruchnis, don't read these brachas as just simple mundane brachas. This, we're dealing here with ruchnis. He has a system. You have a system of being zoicha to tremendous bracha, yoshan, noshan. The system works. Don't break the system. Do what you've been doing. The chinuch that you've been giving your children, your talmidim, the tzedakah, the things that you have done in the spiritual world that you know have brought you success, continue as before. The Chodosh Mibnei, Yosha Mibnei Chodosh Totsiyu. Exactly.
Not to try anything.
Exactly. Chodosh Osa Minat Torah. Chasam Sofer, right? Chasam Sofer. Since when have we gone to Meiron? Since when? Chodosh Osa Minat Torah. It fits in line with the Chasam Sofer. I can have time to me. I told you of art, Vene Rafe, Melech Rafe Neman, Neiron. So I told you both sides of the coin. Okay. There's always a yesod. There's always a yesod in life. You have to experience everything at least once in life. Even the biggest misnagi to Neiron, which there are many of, including yours truly, I didn't go yet. But there's always something, it's kedai to go once. There's always kedai to experience everything once. Rabbeinu Tam, you shouldn't go your whole life without putting on Rabbeinu Tam at least once. Once in your life. Meiron, if you happen to be in that neighborhood, Lag BaOmer, it's not the end of the world. Once to see, what is this all about? If there's so many people who do this, then there must be at least some, I'll tell you a very quick mindset. This really made an impression upon me. There was it's a true story. I don't know the names of the people, but I believe from the Sefer, everything in the Sefer seems to be very reliable. There was a very big Talmud Chacham from America who was visiting Eretz Yisrael, and they told him, listen, come to Meiron. Come to Meiron. He was connected to some politician or something, you know, a very big rebbe. Okay, fine, I'll come to Meiron. He was a misnagate. He wasn't into this. So he came to Meiron, and a big shot. No, in Meiron, there are, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people. You can't get anywhere near to the Kever. But he's a celebrity. So police escort, and there was a very big Rebbe, and they opened up, and they brought him right into the... He didn't have to push, he didn't have to shove his way in. He comes into the Kever, he's up front, yeah, nice. And then he leaves. He then later comments to one of his friends, or one of the people, I don't feel anything special. I don't understand what it's all about. What's the big deal? I come over here. So they said, you know why you don't feel anything special? Because you didn't have to push your way in. You came here. You're a big politician. So they, Kriyas Yamsuf, they took you right in. If you would have to go through the effort of pushing your way in, that would have a roshim, that would bring out the kedusha of...
It used to be a kavod.
Yeah.
Today it's... What they did is, you're in a shul.
Right.
And in the corner of the shul, there's a big matzeva that's covered.
Okay.
There's nothing...
So he said, so this is the way the story goes. I believe the story. So this big, he said, you know, you're right. So he basically disguised himself, or I don't know, he just separated himself from his entourage, and he pushed his way in like a private person. And he came out later and said, "You're right. Now I feel there's something special. I have to acknowledge that it was worth the experience. I'm different now than I was. My attitude towards this event is different now than it was before." Interesting story. I came in, I'm standing right in front of the kever, on Lag BaOmer, nothing. Yeah, because you didn't push your way in. You have to go through the experience, the amelus, to appreciate what it's all about. Okay, let's go to another idea. What?
When is he going to Uman?
I don't know. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, running out of time. Very quickly. Okay, let me tell you another short idea. This is an idea. This week's parasha, we learn about the mitzvos. This idea made an impression upon me. This is not a mussar idea. This is just more of a halachic idea, but it made an impression upon me. We have a contradiction between two gemaras. One gemara tells us, "Ein navi elah mitzvos, ein navi rashai lechadesh shavu." This is the gemara Masechet Megillah. The gemara Masechet Megillah tells about the man sepach. There are letters. There are 27 letters in the alphabet. 22 regular letters, and there are 5 end letters. And these 5 end letters, it appears that at one point in time, it was forgotten when they are used. Are they used at the end of the word, or maybe they're used in the middle of the word? The Gemara has a whole discussion about the man sepach, these 5 letters. The Gemara in the Havin tells us that the one who invented these letters are the prophets. Man sepach, the mem sefis, the nun sefis, the tzadik sefis, the pei sefis, chav sefis. Who invented these letters? The tzayfim, the nevim. The Gemara says can't be. Cannot be. Impossible. Ein Novi Rashai Lechadesh Shavu. It's a pasuk in this week's parsha. Eile HaMitzvos. These are the mitzvahs that were given by Moshe Sinai. Ein Novi Rashai Lechadesh Bo Dover. Cannot be. So the Gemara at the end says, you're right. The letters were given at Har Sinai, but it was forgotten through the generations when the letters are used, when how they're used. Are they used in the middle of a word, the beginning of a word, the end of the word? The Nevi'im just reminded us. They were not mechadesh anything new. They reminded us how the letters are to be used. The end letters are to be used at the end of the word. That's what the Gemara says. Problem is, that's the Gemara. Problem is that we have a contradiction. The Gemara tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu, it's also the Gemara Masechet Megillah, or the Gemara Masechet, it's also the Gemara Masechet Temura. I'm sorry, the Gemara Masechet Temura, that has Zayin Amid Beis, and Masechet Temura. The Gemara tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu died, 3,000 halachos were forgotten. And the Gemara goes through a story of different people that came forward and wanted to reveal the 3,000 halachos through prophecy. And the Gemara says, no, you can't reveal the 3,000 laws that were forgotten through prophecy. You have to see the Gemara in detail in Sa'an Tumut Tezayin, because Eile HaMitzvos, the Gemara quotes this pasuk, Eile HaMitzvos, Ein Novi Rashai L'Chadesh Davar. So how then were these 3,000 halachos restored? The Gemara says, Osnil Ben Kenas, through Amelos, through Pilpul, through learning, he was able to restore the halachos. So we have a very big question. The Gemara Masechet Megillah makes it very clear that the violation of Eile HaMitzvos is only true, the rule has only been violated if a Navi teaches you something new. But if a Navi just reminds you of something which just was in the past, that's not a violation. Moshe Rabbeinu revealed the halachas of Har Sinai, the Klal Yisrael. It was forgotten. So what would be so terrible for the Nevi'im now to use their koach of prophecy to remind us, to reveal to us what was forgotten? This is a very powerful contradiction between the Gemara Masechet Megillah and the Gemara Masechet Temura. So the Mefarshim give a very powerful answer. Very powerful answer, and really affects, to me at least, it changed the whole way you look at the halachic process. There's a difference between a hanhaga, a custom, we spend a lot of time on minhagim, a hanhaga, and a halacha. Now, what do we mean by hanhaga? Where do you put the end letters? And this is a complicated sugya, but it appears you have to study more detail the Gemara Masechet Megillah. It could very well be that it used to be that if there was an option of using the end letters even in the middle of the word. Even in the middle of the word, you can use the end letters. The Sefer Torah would not be possible. If you have the middle of the word, a mem seifis, in the middle of the word, it would not necessarily be possible. If you have an opening letter at the end of the word or not, it became custom. It became the minhag in Klal Yisrael to the point where you can't deviate from this minhag, where you only use the end letters at the end of the word and the opening letters in the beginning of the word or the middle of the word. There are different exceptions, by the way. For example, Lamar Bei Hamisra. Right? There we have an end mem in the middle of the word. How could that possibly be correct? Because it used to be that before it became the custom to follow, it was not ma'akev. B'diavad, you can use these letters either or. It became etched in stone that this is going to be the minog Yisrael. We're only going to use the end letter at the end of the word and the opening letter at the beginning or the middle of the word. It became this was forgotten. This custom, this minog was forgotten. A minog, a Jewish custom was forgotten from Klal Yisrael. A Jewish custom? That we can rely upon a prophet to reveal what the custom was. But a halacha to tell you, should you wear Rashi tefillin? What's the Seder HaParshios? Is it like Rashi? Is it like Rabbeinu Tami? Halacha? If a halacha is forgotten from Klal Yisrael, halacha is so patoira lav bashamayim. Torah is not dependent upon heaven. The way halacha is decided, the halachic process demands that a human being in this world that has no shaychus to olam ha'emes makes a decision based upon his intellect in this world. Ad kidei kach. That if there is once upon a time in this world a halacha, the halacha is osur, and that halacha is forgotten. No one remembers what the halacha is. And now we have to make a decision once again. And we need to know, is it us or is it mutter? And we have an option of having a Navi, a prophet, tell us what it used to be in time immemorial. No, that's not the way halacha works. Even a halacha that was forgotten, it's as if we have no connection even to prophecy. It must once again be decided through human beings here on this world. Torah la vashamayim. Fascinating concept. A Navi Rishai L'Chadesh Davar, but a Navi can remind us, Soifim Amorim Bansepach, to remind us of a Minog. But if a halacha is forgotten, a Navi has no power to remind us of halacha. It must be issued all over again. That's how far the koyach of Torah, the kedusha of Torah, is given to Klal Yisrael. Torah labashmaim, it's within man's power to decide halacha. Now this is very interesting. Many people ask the question, where machlek is tefillin. I'll just give you one of many of hundreds of examples. Tefillin, Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam. So we all wear Rashi tefillin. Rabbeinu Tam, you don't make a bracha. Why is it a machlekes Rashi? Rabbi Asher and Rabbi lived 1,000 years ago. Less than 1,000 years ago. What did they do for the other 2,000 years? Since the time of Matan Torah, were they wearing Rashi tefillin? Were they wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? So the simple answer is, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam are not expressing their own personal opinion. They were just carrying over other traditions that continued all the way back to the time of Matan Torah. So it's not like Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam get credit. But you don't need to come on to that. It could very well be, we live in a very complicated world with golos, and there were things that were forgotten. It could very well be that there were matters of halacha that were forgotten from different communities, and there was no clarity in what tradition was. And maybe that for 2,000 years, from the time of Matan Torah, they came to a question, Hilchas Kashrus and Hilchas Trefas, and there was tradition, Misinai, Moshe Rabbeinu himself was presented with the question, and Moshe in his own intellect decided it's mutter. And then they traveled, Golos, things happened, and they find themselves now 1,000 years later in Poland, and they don't know what to do. And there's another, he says, I'll tell you what Moshe Rabbeinu did. It's irrelevant what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Because Torah, because if the halacha was forgotten from Klal Yisrael, a Navi has no right to tell us, even if a Navi will tell us what Moshe Rabbeinu did, then it's irrelevant. The halacha now has to be cited once again through intellect of human beings, Torah la bashamayim. That's part of the halacha concept. A Navi can remind you of a minog, but a Navi can't remind you of a halacha that was forgotten, and now then the halacha now gets credit to the people who paskin the halacha. It's a fresh start. So maybe in a Hanami, maybe there wasn't a clear tradition anymore exactly due to the difficulty of Golus. Maybe they forgot exactly. So they forgot exactly is Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam. What was the true Masorah? And along came Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam, and they came to the conclusion, Torah b'Shemayim, this is the way it should be. The halacha now starts with credit from Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam, because if halacha is forgotten, it starts new based upon this principle.
Okay. example of Moya from Moya Malavi, right?
Yeah.
That old Rosh. So they didn't know, you could say the same thing that they didn't know before. Like David HaMelech and the Yichus and all that could come from Rosh. And first, and they were, seems that Gemara.
In the Chanami, yes, that's another principle. And according to this, not only they can't even remind us. That's the tremendous chiddush. They can't even remind us of what the halacha used to be. If the halacha is forgotten, it's a fresh start. Okay, let's go to another idea. I saw a beautiful idea from my friend. My friend, he has a way of Akdama. He says that we find in the world many times there are conflicts. All over the world there are wars, there are world wars, there are wars in communities, fighting over the Erev, it's good in Halacha there are wars, there are wars between families, and the worst type of war is a war between man and wife. When a marriage goes sour, that's the worst. Divorce lawyers know it all too well. When a marriage turns sour, why is that so? So Rabbi Friend explains, not only him, many people explain the same, I want to say Rabbi Israel Taub gave a whole speech on this. Why is it so? Why is it that we find men and wife, when they fight, who do they fight? Because they invested the most in this relationship. You deal with people, you have a job, you have a partner in a business, or you have a boss. So it's a job, 9 to 5. I really care about him, he cares about me, we have an agreement, if things don't work out, so we fight, we kill each other, whatever we do. But man and wife, there is love between them. There is an investment. There is an investment of time, of emotion, of love. And the more you put into something, when you are disappointed and find that there's not been reciprocation, or things are not to your expectation, and there's been an enormous degree of investment, when things go sour, boy, do they go sour. They go to the other extreme, and it results in an explosive, violent quarrel between the two parties. There's no greater love between two parties than the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for Klal Yisrael, and that Klal Yisrael has for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Really, more precisely, there's no greater love than Hashem has for Klal Yisrael. So Rabbi Friend says, based upon that, we can understand why in the Toichacha, in the Torah, even in the Brachos, v'lo tigal nafshi eschem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says at the end of the Torah, the Gan biosam yeretz oyvehem lo ma'astim v'lo galtim l'chalasam lo afer b'yisitav. I'm not going to detest you. There are numerous expressions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I lost the exact pasuk. I can't find the exact pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "V'loy ma'asti eschem." I'm not going to despise you. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us this? It says this a few times in the Torah. Why? Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us this, that He's not going to hate us? What's this all about? The answer is because that's what naturally one party would pasuk. Pasuk. Memdal, which Memdal? I don't have a Memdal here.
Page 370.
Yeah, okay. That's one example. That's what I was thinking about. That's one example. What's this all about? So the answer is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Klal Yisrael a tremendous bracha. Hashem says, Hashem speaks to Klal Yisrael, I love you. There's no love in the world that's greater than the love HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for Klal Yisrael. It's beyond our understanding. And if Klal Yisrael rebels against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, worships idols, and does everything that's wrong, does every type of possible avera, what would be natural from our perspective in human beings, that would result in HaKadosh Baruch Hu responding with a fury and an intense hatred towards us. If we have betrayed HaKadosh Baruch Hu after He has shown to us such a deep love, it's only natural that Hashem's hatred should be that much greater. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm different. I'm not like you. I love you, and even if you will betray me, and you will worship idols and do everything possible to anger me, I'm not going to hate you. I'm still going to love you. It's a tremendous bracha. It's a tremendous...
Punish you.
I'm going to punish you, but it's not going to be like the relationship, the situations that we find in among human beings, where when there's a disappointment, it results in an extreme opposite emotional reaction. Now that's Rabbi Frin. Rabbi Frin in print, volume 2. This is what he says, how he explains the significance and what it means. Loina astim. I'm not going to detest you. Now it just triggered a machshav in my mind. I always wondered, we have marriage, every marriage, I'm not one to speak, and a lot of these things don't make a difference because our emotions overtake us, we're only human beings, so this is just theoretical, don't hold me down to anything that I say, but it's very interesting that we have a document in the Jewish world called a ksuva. What is the purpose of this document? The purpose of the document is, it's a warranty, a warranty that in case of death or divorce, in case of death or divorce, the woman is taken care of. She will receive 200 zuz, whatever that means, a year support, $30,000, $50,000, $60,000. In case there is divorce or death, the husband obligates himself to pay his wife a certain amount of money that she can take care of herself, get herself started, put herself on her feet until she can rebuild her life. That's what it's all about. Yet Chazal have embellished this very mundane legal document. Some people are very strong to hanging up yiksuba. Why would you want to hang up yiksuba and display that my wife one day may get divorced? I may one day die, and she will be taken care of. Why would a person in their right mind want to display this on the wall? On the other hand, many rabbanim are very pro hanging up because at least you know where it is. Because if you don't hang it up, you may be living in sin. So it's a very, very good idea to hang it up on the wall. But that is the essence. That is the essence. That is the essence. That is the essence of the ksuba.
Can you repeat that, please? I am.
What? The essence of the ksuba is death or divorce. It's not a pleasant document. Yet Chazal have done something very bizarre. In this document, they've embellished it with different expressions, different commitments. Vano oiker, eflach, ezoin va'afarnes. I will honor my wife. I will support my wife. I will be mafarnes my wife. In this document that is designed by the Torah to guarantee financial support, death or divorce, Chazal adds all these expressions. I'm going to honor you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to be good to you. I don't understand. There should be a separate document for these things. The ksuba document, if you were writing the Shulchan Aruch, okay, if you were on the Sanhedrin and you were preparing a man for marriage, l'chor, there would be a different set of documents. There would be one document in case of death or divorce. How many times have you ever gone to a business arrangement, even to go lease a car? So how many things do you have to sign? Only about 100 documents, right? Sign for this. You don't have one document that's a catch-all. There are different documents. There should be one document, death or divorce, 200 zuz. Oh, Chazal also want a husband to give honor to his wife, to support his wife, to be good to his wife. Oh, so we'll make a separate document, a separate commitment. Why are these, is the embellishment of being good to your wife, loving your wife, and honoring your wife, and supporting your wife, inserted part and parcel of a document whose essence is death or divorce? So perhaps the answer is, it's really based on the Tochacha. Because the Tochacha shows, where do you show real love? The place you show real love is, even if things don't work out, I still love you. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael in the Teichacha, even if you're going to do the worst averos that you can possibly commit, don't worry. I'm not like you. When one person insults another person and there's a relationship and there's investment of time, effort, money, love, and things go sour, there's an explosion, I'm not like you. I'm fully invested in Klal Yisrael. Even if you'll anger me, I still love you. When Chazal decided to embellish the ksuba And for man to recognize his commitment to give honor to his wife, to support his wife, to be good to his wife, they specifically put these obligations in a document that represents a disaster. It represents the time of chas v'shalom, things don't go off well, I'll still love you. I'll still be good to you. Now, of course, that's not what it means literally in the document. The document means I'm going to support you. I'm going to honor you when we're married. It doesn't mean that when we get divorced, I'm going to show you on. That's not what it means. But there is something to it. The fact that this nusach is put in this part of the document, it's showing, it's a reminder to a person how far his love, his obligations have to go. I once said, it was a very bizarre thing to say. It's only because the person, Rachman Lestan, had a very bad experience. The person was divorced. I know this person was divorced. A woman was divorced. And it was not a pleasant thing. And then she was dating someone. I don't know if she ended up marrying him or someone else. But I just remember her saying, I remember my parents repeating this, it was very bizarre to me. She said that he's really such a good person. And she said that if it would come to the point that we would get married and we would get divorced, I know he would be a mensch about it. She said this on experience, because she was divorced. She had a very ugly, bitter divorce where obviously the husband held her up, and now she's planning to remarry, and she sees that the nature of this person is a very good person, and she can get married, and she sees in this person, even if the marriage doesn't work out for whatever reason, I can see he's not going to torture me in the divorce proceedings like my first husband. That's really what it says in the Tochacha. In case of you do everything, I still love you. And that's what Chazal have hinted to us by not requiring us to write up multiple documents. When you get married, it's not like leasing a car. There's one document for death, one document for divorce, and there's one document that says you will show your wife honor. Because that would convey to us, you show your wife honor when you're married. The moment that we activate this document, the divorce, there's no honor, there's only bezionos. No, Chazal, clever. I will show you honor in the document that says I'm going to divorce you. Part of the requirements of divorcing is even in divorce there's going to be honor. That's already puts a person in a whole different chashom. It's obviously, it's not, that doesn't have to be taken literally, but there is something that Chazal are trying to bang into us, to hint to us, to impress upon us that a person's love has to go beyond the rules of dealings with people that are common among the nations of the world.
Yeah. No matter what, I'll remember from the day we were married.
Okay, very good. Okay, I had one more vart, but we're out of time, so we'll stop.